This afternoon we are going to briefly summarize the main observational properties of blue straggler stars. We all agree on the fact that these objects are brighter and bluer than a cluster standard turn-off. There is, as I will show you in a moment, there is a little bit of confusion and in the real operative definition of this object, but they are brighter and bluer than the cluster standard turn-off, and they have been observed in the very first color magnitude diagram of M3 in 1953. Now we are almost convinced that they are the result of a merge of two low mass stars, and of course we have two channels in order to produce this merge: the evolution in isolation of primordial binaries, and then the direct collision that we expect to happen in the very central region of the high density cluster. So I would like just to emphasize that the blue straggler's history is an history of biases. For 40 years, they have been observed only in the outer region of the cluster. And until 1990, we were convinced that the natural habitat for blue straggler were loose clusters. But it was the first observational bias, starting from the high resolution studies and the UV observation of globular cluster. This is the very first, one of the very first observation with FOC 1991, and with these results for the first time we discovered blue straggers in the central region of high density cluster, and this was in 47 TAC. And this was the demonstration that we can also find blue straggers in high density environment. Since then, now we are convinced that blue straggers are a common population in any stellar population when properly observed. So, of course, HST played a very important role in the blue straggers history. And this is because the combination of two properties, UV sensitivity and high resolution. These, of course, allow a systematic study of hot stellar population even in the core high density cluster. And this is a sketch showing the problem of observing faint hot stellar population in globular cluster in the classical color magnitude diagram. As you see in the classical B minus V plane, the brightest objects are the cool giants. And the cool giants, of course, dominate the integrated light and dominate also the flux that you can observe. It's quite impossible to get complete sample of extreme horizontal branch and blue straggers in the core of high density cluster, even with HST. The way in which you have to play this game is switch off the light of the red giant. And the only possible way is to observe this hot stellar population in the ultraviolet. In the ultraviolet, as you can see, the red giants are not a problem anymore. You can observe the extreme of horizontal branch and blue straggler stars as almost the brightest component of these, of the light coming from globular cluster. And this is the real observation. As you can see in the UV plane, you can see the brightest object are the extreme horizontal branch stars, and blue straggers are clearly well defined.
No,
These are example of Bleustrager sequences. As you can see, the distribution of Bleustrager in the UV plane is almost vertical and span more than 3 magnitude. So as you can see, the UV plane is indeed the ideal plane where luminosity function and observational properties of Bleustrager can be studied. So,
do you have any cluster for which you are both V observation and ultraviolet observations?
Yeah, M3 for example.
Do you have any idea how many you are missing when you don't have ultraviolet?
Yeah, the problem is it strictly depends on the cluster properties. In loose cluster, in intermediate cluster, you can still have a good completeness, let's say 80%. But in some cases, I'm going to show the case of M80, there is no way to compare the sample of the UV selected the Bleustrager with the optical one. There is a factor of four.
Many more
in the ultraviolet with respect to the optical. And that are the real critical cases. Of course, the operative definition is intrinsically tricky in the case of Bleustrager star, just because there is no gap, there is no discontinuity. The Bleustrager's sequence merge without any discontinuity into the upper main sequence. And so different authors have different definitions of Bleustrager. So you can define Bleustrager this box or this way, as you prefer. And it depends on the quality of the data and depends on the properties of the cluster. Of course, you can have easy cluster like 5466, but you can have quite difficult clusters like M80. This is the color magnitude diagram in the optical band for M80. And this is an HST observation, and this is a ground-based observation, just to show you that how critical is the property of the cluster. This is a loose cluster, an easy cluster. This is a very concentrated cluster. Even with HST, you see there is some confusion between the extreme horizontal branch and Bleustrager star.
You can get much cleaner even than the one on the left, right?
Yeah, of course. This is
in the cleanest cases, maybe in the UV colors, where you have good proper motion corrected color magnitudes, do you ever see even a hint of a gap? Or it's always that continuous?
No, it is always continuous. No gap here, you see? Are you saying?
So you've never seen
never.
The cleanest cases any hint
no.
of
So the operative definition of Bleustrager, it depends on the quality of the data, but it depends also from the structure parameter of the cluster. In some cases, cluster, very difficult cluster, cannot be observed even with HST in the classical band, in the classical optical band.
Can I just ask a naive question? What will be the observational error in colors? For
this one?
So why the main sequence is always that thick? I'm always puzzled.
This is, of course, error, photometric errors.
So that's consistent just
with the. But you see how thin is the subgiant branch in this case. Remember that these are ground-based observations. So. It's,
as you complain, the arrows increase, of course, and so the main sequence become thicker in the faint of all. And sometimes you also have the galaxy, the contamination from the galaxy that put stars here and there that are not
known for the past. Yeah, in this direction, but still. The thickness of the main sequence is consistent with the errors, with the photometric errors. So in the UV, the same, as you can see, the sequence, the Bluestreger sequence merge into the upper main sequence, but it is in some sense more easy to define a cut. Since the distribution is almost vertical, then you have to decide at which magnitude, at which level of magnitude you have to cut your sample. And of course, we play with this sample, which we define bright Bluestreger sample, which is one magnitude brighter than the main sequence turn off. But of course, you can play, if you want, with the entire Bluestreger sample, including also this faint Bluestreger sample, which are four sigma brighter than the main sequence turn off. So it depends on which is your aim, in the sense that if you want to combine UV observation in the center with optical observation in the other region, then you have to cut the two samples consistently, and Barbara will show us the methodological approach, and so you have to stay brighter than what is required from the UV observation. But if you play with UV observation, you can consider the entire sequences, and you can consider the entire sequence and play with the entire Bluestreger population at brighter than 3-4 sigma, the error of the main sequence turn off.
So by eye here, it looks like the width of the Bluestreger sequence is also consistent with errors. Do you ever not get that? Can you ever tell that the width of the Bluestreger sequence that you see is physical?
Errors get much better as you go brighter.
So here you think already at the tip here the width is meaningful.
Yeah, maybe in some classes. I mean, in this specific cluster, I think that the errors here are smaller than the spread.
I mean, the question really, which is relevant to theorists, is it clear that that extension of the main sequence where you see the Bluestreger is intrinsically broader than the tip of the regular main sequence?
Yeah, I think that it is intrinsically broader than And of course, I see homogeneity is important, but if you combine homogeneous sample with UV observation, I think that it is the best way to play this game. And of course, you can collect UV observation in different clusters and compare the Bluestreger's properties. Here there is an example, and then now we have more 177 orbits in order to observe 45 additional clusters in the UV. So in 2 years, I think we will have a sample of 60 global cluster homogeneously observed in the ultraviolet. And this will allow a systematic study of the Bluestreger, but also of the horizontal branch morphology and the extreme horizontal branch in particular. Of course, with this sample, you can perform cluster-to-cluster comparison. Of course, you need to scale the number of Bluestreger as a function of the luminosity, and so in general we normalize the number of Bluestreger with respect to a reference population. In the UV color magnitude diagram, the natural reference population is, of course, the horizontal branch, which is the brightest sequence in the color magnitude diagram. And so we usually normalize, we define these specific frequencies, which is the number of Bluestreger with respect to horizontal branch. And from this comparison...
Is it only part of the horizontal branch or the whole... So if you have an extended horizontal branch...
And you see, this is a very extended horizontal branch. You see it...
Okay. So
you can use the entire population. Here, there is no problem about the extreme horizontal branch stars because they are quite bright, much brighter than the other.
Using that to normalize doesn't introduce any possible confusion or differences between clusters which have only the red horizontal branch.
But we always check the number of horizontal branches with respect to the Rajaian branch from optical observation. We compare it with the cluster light, and so there is no bias. We are sure that we check that horizontal branches do not introduce any biases.
Because if you normalize with EHB plus DHB, you get much nicer, tighter. The more, in general, the more stars you use to normalize, the better your anti-correlation with total cluster mass.
Yeah.
In general, which I would argue is, since you would expect generally anti-correlation in the first place between these populations and total cluster mass, that you have to be careful that the sample size you're using to normalize doesn't get so large that it overwhelms these small number of statistics of your bootstrapping population.
Yeah. Yeah, but we always play with horizontal branch stars and the cluster light. So you can easily compute the cluster light, the fraction of cluster light that you sample. And in that case, if the horizontal branch scale with the luminosity, there is no problem at all. No?
Okay. You can't, for instance, normalize with a cluster mass directly,
yes,
because you have only a small window which you're looking at.
Yeah, but this is an indirect normalization. We prefer to use a direct observation. I mean, in order to get the mass, you need the distance, you need the... there are... additional step that can introduce some errors. The distance of a globular cluster is not so well settled down.
That's true, but there are so many issues which actually go into modeling the horizontal branch, so that this might actually agree that this might introduce kind of nasty offsets or problems.
The problem of the horizontal branch is modeling the distribution along the tail. I mean, why some cluster have a long extended tail, but the number are essentially due to the time spent of the time spent in the horizontal branch phase. And so this is well settled by the current model, stellar model evolution. So the numbers are correlated with the time, the evolutionary time in that phase. If you talk about the distribution of that star along the branch, then there are different approaches to... But the number is quite solid because it is related to the evolutionary time scale. But the evolution from the horizontal branch. We are assuming that they are almost all nearby the zero age horizontal branch tracks, because the evolution is quite rapid. These are maybe evolved horizontal branch stars. So the stars that we see along the horizontal branch are essentially nearby the zero edge horizontal branch. So, in any case, you can play the same game, and Barbara will show us with the cluster luminosity, and the results is the same. From this comparison, from this comparison, you can see that there are some special cases, and M8 is one of these special cases. As you can see here, there is a large population of blue stragglers when compared with the others. And indeed, M8 is one very complex cluster. It is one of the densest cluster in the galaxy. And you can see that the core radius is 5-6 arc second. And from the optical observation, it's quite difficult to distinguish stars in the very center, even with the HST. This is a sketch of the UV image, and as you can see, in the UV, even quite dense cluster like M80 appear like an open cluster, more or less. And so it is quite easy to detect faint stars. And this is the result that we got 10 years ago about this M80. We discovered this large population of blue straggers, triangular blue straggers, is a huge number. And it is also interesting to note that population of blue straggers is quite segregated toward the center. This is the normalized radial distribution of blue straggers compared with the horizontal branch plus red giant branch. Again, suggesting that the horizontal branch and the red giant branch are distributed within the cluster with the same distribution. There is no evidence of difference behavior between horizontal branch stars and red giant branch in this cluster. In this cluster, we see a very long extended blue tail. So there is no bias in using the horizontal branch, at least in the cases that we studied.
Is there a binary fraction determined in the
M80? No, that's the problem. No, unfortunately, no. That's
is
too crowded. That's the problem. Yeah, maybe with high resolution SES, maybe it's possible to measure, but we don't have the data now.
And so you can't do proper motion correction either.
Well, I think. 10 years we can do. No, no, at the moment it is also not quite close, so it's a real hard cluster, difficult cluster in this case. It is not nearby, it's very crowded, and so on. But in principle, with high resolution observation, with the WPIC-3, the new instrument on HST, it will be possible to.
And so far, all the HST data are on the center.
Yeah, they are on the center. Just.
Because you could get a binary fraction a bit further out where it's less crowded if you could spend the time.
Yeah, in the adjacent part, you can try to measure that. But in the very center, with the data that we have now in the archive, is not possible, maybe. So this is raised the question why M80 has a large population of blue straggers. Maybe in that paper we suggest that it can be connected with the evolutionary status of the cluster. Maybe the M80 is on the verge of collapsing and the collision are delaying the core collapse, generating this huge population of collision of blue straggers. But still, this is a quite interesting cluster that I would like someone to model the structure and the population of blue straggers in this cluster.
For mass scaling, is this also a very big massive core, like 47 TeK?
It has, I think so, yeah, 10 to the 4. I don't remember the exact.
It is not much higher than in 47 TeK. If the core, the total core size is also comparable.
But, well, in the case of 47 TeK, the core size is 24 arcseconds. Here, 7. Yeah. In parsec.
I know the mass in the core of 47 TeK is like 10 to 5 solar mass. I mean, it's like a whole cluster within the core.
This is, I think, it's slightly lower, 10 to the 4, something to 10 to the 4 masses in the core. Just, I don't know exactly the number, but I can find.
Sorry, Bob, answer that question.
Is this one
in our sample?
Yeah, for those of you who look for various scalings of things, did you ever look for scaling with core mass as opposed to cluster mass?
Between?
Yeah, I did.
In the Nature paper.
Tell me.
It scales with core mass to the
0.4 to 0.5.
Yeah.
Wait, what does?
Number of loose stragglers.
Not the binary fraction.
Binary fraction might scale like chromatics minus something, point something.
How does the chromatics scale we did for the mass of the class? I don't remember. I remember that day. Big clusters have smaller core, right? But how does the core mass scale?
I can't remember how the I did check 1687. I know that it falls right on the trend. Core mass between number of loose stragglers and core mass. Yeah, this was
1693.
Yeah, this was not an outlier anyway. This one didn't fall on the trend. There's only one outlier on our trend anyways, and it was 54 or 60 something. It wasn't. Yeah, 1693 did actually fall on. It does correlate. Number of loose stragglers.
So, hold on, did I hear this correctly? So if you just plot number of loose stragglers in the core versus core mass, you see what?
I have the plot.
Sublinear power line.
I have the plot.
That doesn't make sense, because you just said the 47 Tuck has more than 100,000 solar masses and less than 100 loose stragglers.
Yeah.
This is less than 100,000 solar masses.
That's why I'm asking.
I think
it's factor 10 scrubs.
Nathan should go back and check and make sure
I think so too.
That this is in the Piotr database.
Yeah, this is the Piotr database. Yeah, I think that in your sample you select more or less 15 blue stragglers. 15 blue stragglers in the center.
Could be.
Nathan?
I remember 1693.
Yeah. And in our, of course, it depends on the cut, but we expect we measure something like 60 blue stragglers in the core within the core. So it depends, of course, on the cut. This make it difficult to compare. But of course, you see this core minus diagram is quite incomplete at the level. So that survey should be taken with care in the sense that we expect to have a large incompleteness at the level of the horizontal branch and blue stragger. This is the comparison, pure optical observation of M80 with pure UV observation. Of course, you can play and convert this color magnitude diagram in the U in a mix optical guided by the UV and see the structure of this the general overview of the color magnitude diagram. Of course, in this case, we use the position of the hot object from the UV and impose we force the fit of these stars. Otherwise, we cannot measure these faint horizontal branch stars and blue stragger stars. So this is just to say that in particular dense cluster, the UV approach is much more safe in order to select complete sample. And
this cluster also looks like we should be looking for multiple populations in it. If that horizontal branch is correct, that's 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, these are
5 populations.
Yeah, if you believe that each part is a different population, it's okay, but still. For sure, it is one of the clusters showing clearly the gap between different populations. So, of course, you can compare the blue stragglers population with different clusters and see, for example, that in the case of post-core collapse, we almost always find a very small population of blue stragglers. You see the fraction, the normalized ratio for blue stragglers in M80 is ranging from 0.5 to 1. In the case of 6752, it is only 0.16. So maybe these differences are telling us something about the evolutionary, the dynamical evolution of the cluster. Maybe in this case the binaries are preventing the core collapse, and in this case the core collapse destroyed the binaries. I don't know. These are open questions that we need to study in detail. It is also interesting to note that, for example, the largest fraction, the largest normalized fraction, have been found in M80, which is a very concentrated cluster, and NZC288, which is a very loose cluster. As you can see, the Blue Strega's fraction is similar. If you consider only the very central part of M80, you have the same number of Blue Stregas and horizontal branch stars. And this is exactly the case for NGC 288.
But again, by eye, you get the impression that this may not be the best normalization. I mean, I would, if I just do it by eye, comparing the Blue Stregas to just the regular turnoff stars, it doesn't look that weird. But yeah, there's no way to do it in a well-defined way.
But if you play with the Regian branch, the Regian branch is possible to consider the Regian branch because you can combine this observation from you can combine UV observation and optical observation, and then you get the same ratio if you use the Regian branch. The upper main sequence is dangerous because, of course, the completeness is different. And so we can guarantee the completeness for the horizontal branch and for the Regian branch in the optical data. But again, if you normalize this ratio with the light, the result is similar.
So back to Alison and another result. So the number of Blue Stregas scales with the core of the mass. What about the specific frequency?
With core mass? We didn't actually care about it.
But there is a weak with the total, yeah. With the total, there is a weak correlation. I just finish this part and then. Other interesting question is why. Suggesting that something else is going on in cluster is the case of this twin cluster, M3 and M13. They are perfectly twin clusters, same mass, same concentration, same metallicity. Everything is equal, but the number of Blue Stregas is different. And also,
how about core radii?
Core radii is similar, 24, always in arc second, so sorry.
Do you have data for M4 at 6397, that you clustered there?
We planned some observation with the new survey, but they are both in the new survey. So again, in this comparison, maybe the clusters are in different dynamical phase, or they harbor different binary content, and this is the question about the comparison that we played. Suggest that we have a number of questions that we would like to answer. Why similar clusters have different central content? Which is the role of the dynamical evolution in producing and destroying Blue Stregas or binary? The model, I will be very interested in modeling in a dynamical model of M80. And of course, the real problem is that we need all the ingredients in order to reproduce a cluster Blue Stregas content. And the first step is, which is the binary fraction in global cluster. And of course, the determination binary fraction is a tricky question. And this is, for example, the sample that we analyzed by using HST data, SES. But all these clusters are low density clusters. So in this case, the approach is reasonable. For the high density cluster, I think that we still do not have the right data set. In any case, the measure of these of the fraction is, of course, by measuring the fraction of stars along the parallel main sequence, as you can see. It's a statistical approach, of course, but as you can see, in some cases, the secondary sequence is so well defined that it is hard to get a wrong result. So as you can see, there are the binary fraction range from 10 up to 40-50% in these loose and low mass cluster like PAL 12. Of course, the game here is quite complex because you have to play with completeness and so on, but this is what we get from the simulation after we measure the binary fraction. This is the simulated sequence, including completeness, errors, and the binary fraction that we measure, and this is the observed. As you can see, the reproduction is quite good. So at the end, for low mass globular cluster, the measure of the binary frequency via this method is possible. And it is interesting to note that there is a strong correlation between blue straggers and the binary fraction measured in these three low density cluster. And this maybe suggests that most of blue straggers in this cluster are primordial binaries blue straggers.
Remind me, what do you assume about the distribution of Q when you...
Well, we assume, I think we try two different approaches, a flat and a standard. We took from, I don't remember the paper, but we play with different assumptions, and this is the range that we obtain. You see, yeah, there are a few sense of... Of course, the other information that are that we need to extract from this distribution is the luminosity function, of blue straggers in the UV. And it is interesting to note that in some cluster, this is the distribution above the threshold. Zero means that the cut in magnitude, and in some cases, as you can see, the blue straggers reaches 1.5 magnitude below, above the photometric threshold that we impose. In other cluster, it reaches 2.5 magnitude. So in some cluster, we have very bright blue straggers up there. In the other cluster, we do not have these bright blue straggers. Stars. Of course, this is maybe it is connected with the HB morphology, just because in these three cluster have an extended horizontal branch tail, and in this case we have a normal horizontal branch. So maybe there is something connected with the horizontal branch morphology, but it is just to keep in mind this information. Of course, we have to play the comparison with the models, and because a lot of the information is contained in the luminosity function. Of course, the blue stragger distribution depends on when the blue straggers are created, and this was an approach that we played with Allison a few years ago, just to see if the models are able to reproduce the distribution in the ultraviolet of blue straggers stars. As you can see, in the case of M80, with a continuous star formation, continuous blue stragger formation, the results is a reasonable, good fit. And in this case, this suggests that the blue straggers formation lasted for the last 8 years, I think. Between 8 and 5 GigaEar. So this is the game that we would like to play with the entire database. The Busseggers formation seems, these preliminary comparisons suggest that the Busseggers formation has lasted over a long period, many giga years. And also it is interesting to note that in some cases we have bright object up in the upper part of the color magnitude diagram. This could be, again, a recent burst of formation or the result of the triple collision. But again, this is just to show that we need to perform an accurate comparison with the models, because a lot of the information on the formation process of Busseggers and the duration of this formation process is contained in this luminosity function.
What is the basic reason for this conclusion that the formation has lasted over many giga years, and how robust is that?
So you get this distribution in the color magnitude diagram, where I get a point. If we had a short recent burst, we'd get all the blue stragglers on the zero-radiant sequence. But they're not. They're quite extended. So you have to go back to 8 giga years.
But as we said this morning, you might produce some that almost immediately start evolving.
Not at this magnitude. This is shortly, just a little bit above the zero. The ones that have short lifetimes
are up there.
So you have trouble with the width just about turn off, basically.
So this width, and even these models don't produce it. But if you go back even longer, you just populate down. You don't populate this way. So this has always been a problem with my models. And hey, it could be my models. Somebody else do this, please. But I don't get stars over here for any length of time. This is the Hertzsprung gap. They should just go, and my models do. Stars don't. And I still also have trouble with way up there, like getting this guy. So I can do this. I can make this guy if I have a burst of blue stragglers formation.
And again, this scatter there, you believe, is physical and not photometric errors.
This is much too big for photometric errors.
Yeah.
I think for my M67 blue stragglers, I could get the entire width of the blue straggler region, but you have to assume, basically assume collisions, if you think it's collisions, you have to assume collisions have been happening pretty much for the entire lifetime of the cluster.
That's what this said.
Yeah.
So that, for me, would be this model. And so I don't know if the difference between this and M67 is the M67 mass is different, the distribution is different, or...
So those points there would be typically like half a solar mass plus half a solar mass that collided a long time ago. And that's how you populate
that. That would actually be a little bit below, because these are only the bright blue stragglers.
Yeah, the bright.
But what would be the mass there at the bottom? I don't know.
0.6.
Plus 0.6 or 0.6 plus 0.4, something like that.
So well above a solar mass there, the whole thing.
Yeah, so a solar mass is probably this bottom line, somewhere in there.
So all the information on the extension in time is coming from the width at the bottom of that
right.
One. Okay. And what information are you getting from the extension of the vertical extension?
Yeah. So with these collision models, mm-hmm. The only way you can produce bright ones is to have a very recent formation.
Okay.
Because of the thing that Fred was talking about this morning, where if you get, they have to be massive, and they have to be reasonably young.
Okay. You see, if you stop
the... The telling you the oldest ones, and the peak is telling you the...
Of past history.
How recently you got. The two limits in age are coming from the width and the
brightness.
If you stop the formation 2 years ago, you see the...
All of those guys. So they... For example, for that top model, where it says stop 2 giga years ago. Uh-huh. We formed everything 2 giga years ago, but all the bright ones left, and then you're only left with the...
So the bright extension, suggests a recent burst of formation or something more complex.
Wait at the bottom. Peak.
So these are under the assumptions that it's purely collision.
Purely collision.
These are the assumptions. No?
Yeah.
All collisional binary fraction 20%, and blue stellar formation rate is constant to zero.
So they're single-sign collisions plus single binary collisions with cross-section to tell you how many of the single binary collisions give you a collision, a merger.
Now, strongly dependent on the binary fraction, assumed that the age range.
Not as strongly as you might think.
Your thesis.
So this now, we always talk about the central region of the cluster. Of course, this is only part of the history because we know that there are some important signatures by considering the entire extension, the Bleu-Strugger's radial distribution, and Barbara is going to talk about. We can stop if you want, and then.
No, I think you should do your thing after the coffee break, because with just a little more discussion now, it's going to be comfy.
Can I ask a really stupid question?
Sure.
On the very extended horizontal branch, anybody been able to get spectra to show that these are in fact high surface gravity stars?
Well, in the case of 6752, it's possible because it's just
yeah.
And for example, I think that the Padua group is doing spectroscopy of that star.
Like white dwarf merger remnants and things like that.
Mm. Well, or like are they sub-dwarf?
Yeah, but
are they really the horizontal branch tipping down? Mm. Or is it something cooking up?
Yeah.
Really embarrassing if they're low surface gravity stars. Interesting, but
yes.
I didn't know if it was possible because of the crowding and things.
Can I ask about the binary fraction which you've shown for those clusters, which
yeah.
was up to 65% in some clusters? So it was assuming what distribution for binary periods. So how wide the binary were?
Doesn't matter.
Well,
they must be unresolved binaries.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the only thing.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, this came only from measuring the relative number in each beam. I mean, from that. So we don't measure any physical parameter. Yeah.
But when you say that it's 50% binary fraction, it will represent the binaries with how wide binaries it will be.
Mm.
Is it only hard binaries, or it's pretty wide binaries?
No, it's everything that's counted up there in the column. So any binary that looks in the image like a single star.
It's not like 100 AU, maybe 1,000.
So yeah, so the question is what's the...
How wide
is a binary that you would start counting as two single stars in the image? It's going to be huge.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly the number. I will...
Such binaries should be gone anyway.
Well, not in these very, very low density environments. And if, if you're...
Yeah, in this case, maybe they are still...
12,000.
0.1 arc second is about 10 kiloparsecs. So
10,000 kiloparsecs.
But you can actually...
If I think of a soft binary in those classes...
Soft binaries. Can
well,
I
compute
that number? Well, yes.
It's 100 AU?
Yeah, well, you're right. 100 AU would be unresolved. But is there any 5,000 AU binaries
there?
Somebody does a star correlation function. You see the closed counters?
I mean, you could do the exercise for each thing.
Mm-hmm.
Given the angular resolution, what's
the
size
of the
star count as two single stars? And given the density, you know, what's the lifetime of that binary? And if it can actually live long, then you might have some of those that you didn't count.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a very small correction, but might be worth checking.
Also, those clusters have densities less than 10.
Yeah, but this is the core, right? This is all the core.
Yeah, this is all the
core. This is all core density.
Yeah, this is a very the central
part. The core density has to be still like 100 or 1,000.
Mm, yeah.
And in the very low.
This is going hardware you will say.
Well, this is going to almost open cluster where we know it's high binary function. So somehow
yeah, you see
the
log
that were born with low binary function.
But this takes also into account chance superpositions of stars. Your completeness and
Well, are all included, of course. Okay. So, do you want to stop and?
Well, unless there's, we have a few more minutes before coffee for questions.
You go back to M3 versus M13.
Yeah. This is, this is the this is your plot. This is the number of blue straggers in the core, measured from the UV, the optical survey, and this is the core mass.
Yeah, so just to make a comment on what Stein's asking earlier. So our blue stragger counts are going to be less, I think, than in general Francesco had, since our selection criteria was different. We went a little farther away from the turn-off to avoid sort of over-counting blue straggers due to photometric error in general. I mean, ideally, you want a selection box that goes well down into the main sequence, right?
Are you then really measuring blue stragglers, or are you measuring the shape of the tip of the blue straggler distribution? Well, if you're cutting too high, you're not measuring the number of blue stragglers. You're measuring how the blue straggler distribution, how the plume of blue stragglers shape is.
Yeah.
You're actually measuring the history of the blue straggler, not the number of blue stragglers.
You can look at our CMDs in the box.
I haven't found the entry yet that can get through.
The main problem with that sample may be the completeness. Not the selection.
We did play around. We did a few
tweaks
and tried removing clusters.
You use the Piatto sample, no? Which is optical. And so, have you seen the picture, the figure of M80 in the optical plane? You are highly incomplete.
Yeah. So that was one cluster for which we did find that the completeness was a concern. We ended up trying to remove like 10 clusters or so from our sample that were a risk as far as completeness was concerned, and we didn't find anything changing in terms of our correlation.
Is the distribution function of the stragglers in 47 tough code very different from 90? Do you remember that?
From?
No, I don't remember.
No, maybe has this very tall plume of blue stragglers.
It's
actually quite similar. 47 tech is an interesting case because it's one of the few clusters where we've looked at the distribution of the color magnitude diagram as a function of radius. Mm-hmm. And it's quite different for three radio selectors.
The very bright blue stragglers are all in the core, right?
The bright ones are in the core, but it's more than just the bright ones. That extension to the red doesn't show up.
In the core.
So in the core, you can say that they're very much on the zero-edge main sequence, or very close to the zero-edge main sequence. And then as you get further out, the bright ones disappear, and the faint ones shift red. So they look like they're more evolved out there.
Short-lived collision boost drivers are still compatible with those few very bright ones in the narrow sequence, at the top.
They're for the most part.
You make them bright, they live very short.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you get. So if you take this at face value, okay, let's say the number of blue stragglers is independent of cluster mass and collision rate, but scales with core mass. For those of us who don't perfectly remember your nature letter, remind us, what's the basic conclusion for this? What do you infer?
Yeah, that's a question mark. The fact that there is this stronger correlation means also that the number of blue straggers correlate with the luminosity, I think, no? Is more or less the same. And I was surprised to don't see the effect of mass segregation, because what we see in all cluster is that the number of blue straggers in the center are largely enhanced by the segregation. So you expect to see in the center that the number of blue straggers should not be correlated with the luminosity anymore, just because.
You expect that they'd be mass segregated.
Yeah.
So the way we're interpreting it, which may be a little bit false, but what we found, so we found this correlation. First of all, we were shocked because there hasn't been a correlation for 20 years. But we found in any case. So we found a correlation. We're very happy. And then we realized that it wasn't a linear correlation, which meant that if you plot the number of a population tracer versus the total mass, it should be a linear correlation, and it wasn't. In fact, it was much less. It was mass that half to the 0.4.
So it was linear with RGB and the.
Do you want to make a sound on this book?
Sir?
Do you want to make a sound on this
book? I think no.
Yes, but it's a huge core.
It's not a global cluster.
It's not a global cluster. Don't worry.
M54?
I don't think that was on the right.
What does HGC get?
I don't know.
Now, this is another interesting question. That in the case of a very large core, so you measure only a small fraction. The WIPIC 2 sample only a small fraction of the core. So, you
correct.
So you correct the core mass that you sample from.
Yes.
So what was?
Finish the story. Nonlinear, sublinear correlation. So then, basically on the Salima paper, would show that the binary fraction is anti-correlated with core mass or with cluster mass. We calculated that number of blue stragglers is proportional to the number of binary stars rather than the number of stars, and until there are better data, it works. Mm-hmm. So until we get a better sample of binary fractions.
I mean, that also might wipe out completely the gamma correlation because...
And it wipes out the gamma correlation.
It's collisions through binary interactions at higher densities. You destroy a lot more of the binaries and you end up with fewer blue stragglers.
So?
You're saying all the blue stragglers are coming from binaries, the more binaries there are...
From collisions in binary interactions.
Yeah, we're not necessarily saying that collisions don't happen, but single collisions or predominantly gamma numbers in some way don't work.
Yeah, but in this plot, the mass segregation is only the scatter. I would expect a much stronger effect on this because in some cases we see. Two, three times the blue stragglers that we expect in the sample.
Binary stars, then the binary stars have also been mass segregated. Mm. Yeah. And so that might be the reason that we get a correlation with what we think is binary number rather than core mass. It just happened to work out that the binary fraction also correlates in this nice way with core mass, and so we got this, and so we can start looking at it. Honestly, we don't really know, but we got a correlation, so finally
one correlation. Yeah.
Okay, coffee?
Yes.